There is a park that is known for what, y'all? You know what's up. Paisley Park, 2022. Here we go. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Dr. Funk Live Podcast. Thank you guys so much for subscribing on YouTube, checking us out live on Facebook and Twitch as well. Today, we are going to be reviewing the 2022 celebration. And for the people that aren't checking this out live, thank you guys so much for checking us out on iTunes, Stitcher, and other places. Always appreciate your donations to make stuff happen. Hopefully you guys can conversate through each other and with each other. Through each other may be hard. With each other is more fun. But, you know, more likely with this one, we're just going to be doing a straight review. And then we will be doing an after show. We're going to have more comments, more other things. The main thing is to have this one to be more factual, more stuff than opinionated. And sometimes opinions affect things going. Victoria, nice to see you. Linka, good to see you. Hello from COVIDapolis is right. Yes, my dear. I hope that you are doing well. I'm doing as well as I can with you on that. And we'll get into that as well. Celebration 2022 arrived after a few years of being away due to COVID and due to other things. So this one was a little bit different. The circumstances that they had to work upon, you got to give them a lot of credit for how it was handled, put together last minute and whatnot. Those things going on. And I don't have my screen that I normally do. That's why it's going to be harder to interact with you guys. I want you guys to interact with each other. And, you know, we will for the after show. I'll be more closer to you guys to look at comments for this. Dave, thanks for being in the room. Hope Maite is doing well. Glad that you guys tested negative. And this is where it is. I'm live in Minneapolis with you guys. So let's go on with it for the celebration 2022. As we said before, it was away for a few years. It was planned for 2020, but then the madness of the past 2 years, technically 3 years, because you had 2020, then 2021, there was no celebration. Then 2022, there was. So technically, it's like 3 years. So, you know, there was the kickoff party at the W Hotel. They kicked it all off with DJ Linka Paris in the mix. And you were on fire that night doing an amazing job. And everything was handled. Everything looked beautiful. They had a little purple carpet set up for you guys to take photos. They had a VIP area up top where there was a lot more room. And you had Robert Whitman being interviewed, as well as some surprise guests with David Z and Dr. Fink stopping by as well. So Robert Whitman had his prints, talked about some stuff. And actually, before the event, a few hours before, actually, no, for this one, but he was there for a few hours before, Robert Whitman was taking photos of people in the parking lot across the way that had the musical notes and whatnot that were made famous by Prince's photos back in 1977 that Robert Whitman took in for 78. Whoever has those photos of me with you guys, allow me to jump in. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing them. Again, the energy level at the W was just on fire. Linka had a lot to do with that. And that place is on fire for different reasons. But let me say this. I think we as fans, after the few years that we have endured, and me being in my place in LA, by myself, giving myself projects, not going out that often, maybe once a month over the past year, but for the first 2 years of it, really being stuck inside, I think we were all happy to see each other. And that's what made things, you know, a little bit to where we may have not been able to control ourselves, not wearing our mask, hugging each other, giving handshakes instead of the fist bumps that we've been doing for the past 20 years, which, you know, was to me cool long before COVID. We can get into that stuff. we are just really, really happy to do it. And again, with the celebration, we're going to mention this quite a few times, with the celebration now being in June, it feels a lot more celebratory. And as each year goes by that's away from his passing, it makes it easier for us to celebrate him. And April's to me are still a little bit too hard, because my own personal opinion for that is just there's too much stuff going on in April, not just for the 21st when it comes to him. So, you know, I hear that the family had a lot to do with it being moved till June. This is the first one to do it. I think Mitch and the crew at Paisley Park was very accommodating. And again, you fans brought it to a whole nother level. And I think that's what made Linka's set even more amazing, was the energy that you guys gave her. I'm sure she can attest to that for sure. So it was a great, great kickoff Thursday night. I think everyone was running around everywhere. So by Friday morning at Paisley, I think a few people missed their buses and whatnot, and they were doing a shuttle this year from the Renaissance Hotel. And I did stop by the Renaissance the day before, wanting to check out merch. And I figured, let me go in there a few hours after they give out the passes, and I thought it would be dead. Oh no, you guys were having a party in the hotel lobby, and I wasn't expecting that. I probably didn't get to look at the merch and see the Paisley crew until like an hour into it. So you guys were ready, and you guys were definitely buying the merch. So Friday morning, get to Paisley. We were chilling in the VIP area before you guys got in there, and someone from the estate made a joke, but also being a little bit serious, so we're probably all gonna get COVID through this. And I was like looking for something, knock on wood, and there wasn't anything around. And excuse me for that, guys. You know, it was going to play into it. That's what's being said. But as a first kickoff guest, you had Chris James, and you had the VIP area was in the front. Media or whatnot had to be kind of like GA to the side. And Chris James, you know, as he kind of joked, he was the opening act for everything, but what a great opening act. And I'll talk about what should be probably opening acts later in the show. But for that, Chris's interview was with Dwayne Tudall, and Chris brought his own laptop to the event. So although I believe that stuff was estate approved, for everyone else's panels, when unreleased music was played, it was played from the back where they have to signal someone, which would be kind of like where Prince would have the soundboard and other stuff when he was here with us. But he had his own setup, and the songs that he played from it, he played quite a few unreleased stuff, a different version of Boyfriend, That Girl Thing, the one that we put on originally and debuted on my original show. That was just acoustic. And this one was That Girl Thing without orchestra. And then Stoneflower, which was the Third Eye Girl, I'll Take It as Uncirculating. And Rock and Roll Love Affair, which was a demo version where, you know, instead of mentioning stuff, he mentioned about, you know, getting pizza for the road or whatnot. So he's kind of done that before with the pizza stuff. When he's doing demos or rehearsals, a famous one for that is DMSR, where he talks about root beer and pizza and something else and it being a perfect weekend. I'm sure you guys know which one I'm talking about, although you guys aren't supposed to have it. They play the Syracuse soundcheck. And John Bream, who was able to get access to everything, at least one of us was able to. I didn't talk to him this weekend, unfortunately. Bream was kind of like making fun of it. Only Prince fans would be excited as someone going check, check, 1, 2. But during that check, check, not only did you get a little bit of the latter, and he played a few chords from God, but you had the first few verses from Moonbeam Levels. And what's so interesting about that is that, you know, we're led to believe that the only time he ever did that live in concert, at least in concert, not soundcheck, not this, was in 2014, which was kind of like off a tweet that I did a few days prior, and then he did a little bit of it. We'll get into that another day. But that was really cool. And then Chris was trying to explain and about how Prince was so far ahead of the game in 85 that, you know, even though they didn't have this stuff to be done, but he was wanting to be in Dolby Surround and have stuff being in different channels. He wasn't able to complete the story, and I did follow up with him to ask about that because the question was stepped on, unfortunately, and it happens. But it made it easier for him. It made his job worlds easier to take the 2-inch master tapes. And that's why I've heard people saying that they're hearing Brown Mark more clear on the bass. You're hearing Fink's vocals from 1999. It's more clear because he was able to use the different stems and the different channels to make this happen. And what was so interesting to me regarding Chris speaking was the day before, the first person before I got into the Renaissance Hotel, the person was like, man, I just need to tell you because you were saying on your show that the sound is going to be amazing for Syracuse. I'm like, I'm not buying it. I already have this. I want to do it. Then I'm driving to the celebration, and on Sirius, they're playing the long version of Purple Rain from Syracuse. It was like the first time I heard it, and I heard that stuff a million times. You were so right. And I'm like, I can't wait to tell Chris that about what a great job he did on the sound. And there was just other questions. They talked about the Jimmy Kimmel performance where Chris performed on, and that was brought up in the 2017 panel as well. Love to hear more stuff about how Chris even got discovered in his journeys, because he was in some of the original Third Eye Girl videos, the long form videos that we had to pay $7.77 to get, and just his other journeys, because there's probably so much that Chris has done that we're not aware of because he was the last engineer that worked for Prince. But it was really great to hear him talk and have this unreleased music played. And you were getting hit over the head with a lot of unreleased music this weekend, which was great. So after that, we were given kind of like free rein for a tour for ourselves. At the same time, something else was going on. We'll get into that. So we had free rein for the new exhibit for Randy St. Nicholas's photos. And of course, some of the stories that she was bringing up, like when I was around the room, I was telling people some of the stories because I remember what she said in 2017 about it, and that I've had been lucky enough to have one-on-one time with Randy before. And it was just simply amazing. She's a plethora of information. And the 2 hours that me and her talked, it could have been easily 3 or 4 just because, you know, I got to research the stuff. You have to know what's going on and be on top of it. But some of the photos that were there were absolutely amazing. And of course, we got to see it on the screen. And this is one of the reasons of why I want you guys to be at the celebrations in the future. And I know that they'll be easier to be better planned. There was just so many circumstances that made it different. But these are the things that I want you to be at, and I want to see your guys' faces there. For photos like this blown up, kind of like the same size as the Jeff Katz photos that you guys have seen before, and just from the pearls being all over the room and just how it was done. It was done in the Purple Rain room, and you were able to see the basketball court that was underneath it, where Plectrum Electrum was recorded, where a lot of stuff was done, where I've heard some stories about the glass and Kim Basinger. And there was just basically handprints and butt prints all over that place. But you didn't see the mirrors. You saw the basketball court. But that room is famous for a lot of reasons, including the Daisy Chain video. And that's where Prince would whip everyone's butt while playing basketball. So it was nice to see that. And then there was more of us inside for the beautiful experience for the shoe collection. And an amazing job was done by that with Paisley. And that exhibit has been going on since last July. It's another reason for you guys who may not have attended Celebration, but were able to go in July or August. Definitely go there, because the shoe exhibit is something that should be seen along with everything else. I always recommend the Ultimate Experience Tour if you have the time. 3-hour ride is definitely worth it. So yeah, the shoe collection, I've seen it before, I'm a tall person. I didn't kind of like want to be in everyone's way. The shoemakers were there and Andrea was with them. I spoke with Andrea briefly about some things going on with the estate and then just about this experience and being able to do it for the past few years. And she was excited for everyone to be back there as well. So I kind of went back to the Randy room to let other people who haven't seen the shoe experience get it all. And let people talk with the shoemakers. And I did point out that they're in there because they were like, oh, this, who are they talking to? I'm like, oh, go talk to them. And he was like giving out a fancy card and signing stuff. And then I kind of went out to the gift shop for a bit, talked with Chris James, let him know what an amazing job he did. And there was the NPG. And that's the thing that I was talking to you guys about. While we were in there, they were setting up for a recording session with the NPG, and they're doing the Son of Sexy MF. Don't have to use the other words. It's actually called Son of Sexy MF. So those are the things that were going on with that. And it's just, you had the recording session. It was with Tom Garneau. And Chris wasn't involved with those, but that's basically Tom's kind of like time with the NPG and doing stuff was that. And you got to have the breakdown. You got to have, the band got to hear Prince, and so did the people that were listening in the room in the headphones. They were able to just hear Prince's vocals and then some of the guiding that he was doing. You didn't hear certain stuff after the clicks that the band members heard, but that's just how it goes. It was quite amazing with that stuff. Sexy MF is already a funk jam. So just imagine how Son of Sexy MF sounded. So you had that experience. The NPG seemed really free. And after I saw them, they seemed really happy. So to basically be recording in there with an audience, and they may have done some rehearsals before, but it just seemed like, you know, I'm sure like Levi, I wish this question could have been asked, but they didn't do a panel, how it was to be back in there recording. And I feel like there was just some weird things that they were feeling while in there. So after that, and we kind of felt, it kind of felt like for me, it felt more of a 3.5 hour break than 3 hours just because of our timing of things. But then we were kind of like outside or being able to mingle in VIP. They had food trucks and items. They had trivia going on. And it was quite a long break. And of course, as soon as I was stepping outside, people wanted to take photos, talking with people about things. Heard this a lot on Thursday night and Friday to the people that were saying, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have been able to get VIP this year, and then hearing other stuff. So keeping this tour and Paisley Park centralized, and we'll talk about more on the after show about other things said, but it was really great seeing a lot of you guys and seeing that you were having a lot of fun, albeit I think the break got to a lot of people was very long. And then for us, on that day, on Friday, we had 3 back-to-back panels. So you had 3 hours after having a 3 hour break, and now you ate, you're kind of sitting down. And this is where we'll get into this, where I feel some concert footage should be played. Yes, you had unreleased music and you had some really cool stuff going on. And with Thursday, you had Jill Jones and you had this stuff going on. One of the tracks that was played was actually for Tom Garneau, Jill. And the reason I'm bringing this up now is just because it intertwines with it. Flesh and Blood is not a Graffiti Bridge outtake. It's actually from 1989. And it was going to be for Jill Jones' second album, albeit Prince and her were not seeing eye to eye at the time. They barely made it through Graffiti Bridge. But of course, Jill admitted that she was really liking the way Prince looked at that time and was like, maybe I should take him back. So there was some of that going on. And just Jill, we got Jill filtered. And the thing is Jill is able to reflect more, in my opinion. Unfortunately, I'm trying to stick to facts. She's able to reflect more on good times and the relationships that she had. And then to hear Wednesday over the system at Paisley Park. Yeah, we got some of this stuff circulating, but for her to give the background story of why the lyrics, you know, were very heavy with the contemplated suicide and then contemplated, you know, holding you from, you know, 3 until 5. I'm getting the lyrics wrong on purpose for a reason. So to have to done this stuff and her to explain it, how heavy it was, and that's most likely why it didn't make it. But Wednesday is such a brilliant track. And Jill's voice, you know, Prince is able to get stuff out of people they weren't able to get. But Jill has been around for a while. And for her to hit those notes in a different way. And when you hear Flesh and Blood, you can tell that there's just some other stuff going on. And Jill shared a story to where this is showing the many sides of Prince, how he can be a little bit vindictive. And that knowing that there's kind of some friction between Susanna and Jill, they love each other now, but you can see where some of this friction came to where Jill is just being told, I need you at the studio. Has no idea what's going to be done for this. And then it was for the Bright Lights Big City song. Right now, Good Love. So they're doing that. And it's Susanna directing her and telling her what to do. Just imagine how tough that is. You're kind of not getting along with someone. And then you're put into situations where you feel you're going to be working with Prince, how you normally do. And now it's her directing it. That must have been a lot of fun. So that story was very interesting to hear. And as we've known before, the last time that Jill worked professionally with Prince was in 1990 during Graffiti Bridge. And that was tough for her because although this wasn't talked about at the panel, her character was basically combined. You know, you had all these things where Madonna was originally supposed to be in it and she didn't like the script, and Kim was supposed to be in it. And then when Kim dropped out because of their relationship, basically like Jill's character was kind of like combined with someone else. So her lines and her character wasn't going to get as much screen time. So it made stuff very rocky during that. And that was one of the last times they worked together professionally, and they didn't exactly talk over the years. So I thought it was very interesting that the question of if she knew what the egg was, because that would be building around 2002, the image of 2001. What we have been told in the past, and I've had people confirm it, is that it was supposed to be a restaurant. And Stephen Hill, when we had him on a guest on a show last year, advised that it's going to be used for something later this year. Obviously, it isn't being used yet, but it is. I haven't told, and I don't know how accurate this is, so don't hold me to it. But that's probably maybe where they're going to set up merch. I don't know how that would work, though. Sometimes when it's the cold weather, how are you going to get people from the museum and the studios over to there? But those are the things that we heard. So we did get some stuff from Jill that we haven't heard before. And again, her being able to reflect on stuff and be more open to it and seeing things lovingly or just able to just be candid and with her candor about there was rough times with him, that he sometimes wasn't Steve, that he could be the jerk Prince. So you had that. Then you had Tom Garneau. And Tom kind of had a rough start with Prince just with the hours during the Batman era and working with Femi Gia, who's an absolute genius. And I love him to death and miss talking with him. And Tom also worked on the Symbol album. He came back. They did talk about that story, but the Symbol album come and so many unreleased stuff during the 90s material, just the plethora of information Tom would be. And because, you know, he was getting married at one point after the Batman sessions and being on, he wanted out. And people were like telling him, you can't really get out. You know, it's either you die or you're let go. But because he stuck to it, he was let go. And then a few years later, Prince ran into him while he was recording, backing up David Z, who was working on Fine Young Cannibals. For their hits, She Drives Me Crazy, and a bunch of other stuff from that album. And they ran into each other, and, you know, Prince is like, you want to work? you want to work for me? He's like, I'm recording for him. He's like, yeah, I know. You want to do stuff for me. So he was able to set his hours. Instead of being there all the time, he talked about how he could show up at 12 o'clock and start work then. He did talk about how it was kind of tough working for them a little bit because David wanted the control room of Studio A to be basically so cold. And for example, Prince in Studio B, when we're recording, he wanted it really warm. So he was going back and forth to check on stuff. You know, I'm sure, you know, how I feel congested right now. There's probably some congestion going on. We're going on from rooms like that. They played Flesh and Blood. And again, that's not a Batman outtake, although it was referenced as such. And then American in Paris, although it is an unreleased track, unfortunately, it is heavily circulating. But the reason it was played is because Tom was one of the people that were doing the woes in the background of American Paris. Let me just say, when it comes to Flesh and Blood and American Paris, it's kind of like Mind Bells. It sounds very dated as tracks. And I would have loved to have heard Sacrifice of Victor with Rosie's vocals, especially because we were getting that in the concert the next time. And let me tell you something. The stuff with Rosie that you guys haven't heard yet, and then we'll talk about with the concert, she brings it to a whole nother level of Sacrifice of Victor. So if you guys love that song before, it's going to be taken to an 11. So you had these conversations going on, and I really... You know, I probably would have put Tom in a corner for like hours and talked to him about some of the 90s stuff and because went through so many different variations from where it got to just the one word titles. Originally, it was supposed to be a 5-song EP released on June 7th, 1992 for Prince's birthday. And Warner's was like, no, you haven't sold 5 million of the Symbol album yet. And that's what caused a lot of friction. And I would have loved to have heard more of that story and to see what was going on and what Prince's frustrations were if he let him know what was going on that led to the name change, that led to, you know, because during Graffiti Bridge, although he left for Diamonds and Pearls and was Michael Koppelman doing stuff, he recorded Diamonds and Pearls so fast after Graffiti Bridge and had to wait a year and there was stuff being added to it. And that was taken off. And then you just hear different things. So I'd love to see that. And then we had as a bonus, it was kind of like a surprise, at least on my pass, the Beautiful Collection, that you had the people design the shoes and the people at Paisley that put it together. It was a lot of people on stage at one time, and it seemed to go on for a while where the same question would be asked to different people, and they almost gave the exact same answers. And I understand of wanting to give everyone equal time on that, the shoemakers and people that were there for the shoes, and then the Paisley employees getting their shine because they put this together, going through thousands of shoes to come up with the only few hundred that they used, and a meticulous attention to detail they put onto it and didn't want to mess with things so much. They're just trying to clean it up. And I did love the question about where the designers worried when they would see Prince jumping from pianos off this, that it would hold. You know, that was interesting. It was a little bit long-winded, but it had nothing to do with that, with stuff. It just had to do with the pace. And I just feel it was people with the 3-hour break and then that being a panel that was going to now be 3 hours long at a sense of following Jill, then Tom, in the shoe collection. Then we kind of had a brief break before getting ready for Brown Mark and members of Maserati / the Bad Boys of Paisley Park, along with Rashida and DJ Spinna. So you had a little bit of a break. Then you had this stuff coming on where you have musical performances back at Paisley Park. Notice I didn't say live musical performances. Just going to that, maybe not have a track at Paisley. Not going to hold on to it. They haven't exactly been touring together or doing stuff. And I can't remember their last live performance was. I think it may have been in Atlanta. But it's been a while. So that plays into it. They did do covers of America and a lot of other stuff. There was energy. There's a lot of facial reactions that were going on. So those are the things that are going on. Sorry, I'm not seeing all of your guys' comments right now, and we'll get into that. If there's anything that someone sees, I definitely should talk about in the after show, let me know. So you had that, and you had Rashida in the mix and DJ Spinna, and you guys had it going on until 2 o'clock in the morning. Notice that there was a little bit of fatigue that was happening, and I heard about that. But I'm sure just going on where you had one dance party the night before and you had this going on. At least you have live music returning to Paisley Park, but the main event was going to be for Saturday night. So Saturday morning, I get in there bright and early, and on my shuttle, it's Hannah and her kids, and I haven't seen Hannah in a while. And the first thing she says to me is, "No way." The last time I saw Hannah was April 16th, 2016. I saw her and Josh at Paisley. And that we were all kind of like, when we saw each other, it was more like a hey. You know, with this, it was a lot more energetic. Seeing her with her kids at that time that I saw her before, she was pregnant with her first, out around the fourth. And then we're just chilling for a bit. Saw Josh, gave him a hug. I've had Josh on my show before. Great guest. Good to see him. Good to see that the cowbell guy is gone. And just, it's good to see that energy there. So then we had the panel with Joshua, and the songs that were played during that time was mostly remixes. He played the remix of Queen, which was on the live stream, and some of you guys downloaded that off of that, although it shouldn't be circulating. That's how some of you got it. But to hear it on that Paisley sound system, and him couldn't help himself getting up at times, dancing to it, pointing out different things, was awesome. And then they played a version of an unreleased Rita Ora song where only a sample made it, that Trevor sent me years ago for you guys to be played with this, which is a much longer mix. And Josh telling stories like, I didn't know this because I don't want to read the police stories, and someone pointed out to me, that's in the room right now, put some attention on yourself if you want for it. But, you know, him telling the story about the last time he saw him literally was 2 days before April 21st. Talking about the food and the Snapchat filters that they were doing. It would have been interesting kind of have a follow-up on that. We have heard the mentor question before, teacher, and it is a question that sometimes leads to stuff, but sometimes we have to have follow-ups. And I understand that you're kind of like to an hour time limit. Where are we going to go? My take out of, you know, was able to go over. I just want people to be able to explain themselves and for the journeys, whether it was 1985 or 2015, it's just as important, and for it to be told, and how, you know, we know about, at least some of us do, about Josh's history, where he was on the reality show on BET and had these things coming back, and him only being 22 at the time, working for Prince and getting that tremendous stamp of approval of being a person that gets credit for producing Prince, along with, while Prince would have the produced, arranged, composed, and all that other stuff, Joshua was getting the light that not a lot of other people were able to get. So those are the things that are really cool about that. And Josh's energy, it's good to see, and to see him back at Paisley. And, you know, to talk about that, he was kind of feeling himself in times, but he would be like, that was the cowbell player, because that would be Josh's thing for a while. He was the cowbell player, but then he was the keyboardist. Then he was the person that was doing production with Prince, to kind of see those things and have a reflection on it, and to see Josh grow as a person is amazing. And knowing that Hannah's brain works like mine makes me not feel like such a savant about stuff. That is basically going to her like, babe, when did this happen? Kind of like seeing that and hearing it. It made it very cool. So after that, an hour with Josh, we were now led on to different tours, different stuff going on. Now, for media, except for John Bream, we weren't supposed to be in the recording sessions. And it's like, kind of went out for a bit to go by the gift shop and whatnot. And I talked to some other people, saw Hannah with the kids again. And then, kind of like the recording session was going on, but I knew it wasn't for us. Then Mitch pulled us in, and I saw Trevor, and Trevor sat next to me, and I was able to talk to him for a minute. And then now we have a Third Eye Girl session. So, as you had yesterday with the NPG, along with Chris Coleman on drums, this time with Third Eye Girl, you had Liv Warfield, but you also had Donna Grantis and Hannah Welton. Unfortunately, Ida was not able to be there, but was there in spirit. And just for them to talk and then to find out the track is going to be What If, which was not on Plectrum or Electrum, was recorded afterwards. But to me, like our first thing of Hannah on vocals was Live Out Loud. And then to have Hannah's vocals sound the way they did in What If, it's just like what I said about Jill and what Prince was able to get out from other artists, whether it's male or female. Same can be said about Paul Peterson. It's just something that's a different level. And just the more time that goes by and the more that What If comes on in my car or other place I'm at, just the intros to both versions, I'm like, oh man, this is my jam. Of course, I can say about so many different Prince songs, but I really truly love how much Third Eye Girl came from how I saw them perform Screwdriver on Fallon. And I watched back and I'm like, it was a little rough at times, but they killed it with Bambi. But again, by the time you have What If, they were on a different level. And it just was amazing to see. And then live to be in there and do stuff. And then to hear those Prince vocals, to have stuff isolated, to hear them recording. And then just to see the happiness before they went to the room of Hannah, the happiness of Donna, who to me has always been somewhat shy and she's coming out of her shell. And she's such an amazing guitar player. I cannot say enough good things about Donna. And I told her that, and I told Trevor that. It just makes me happy. And then to hear that, you know, that Hannah, and I don't think they're having this trouble in the MPG recording session, but Hannah was like saying that she didn't hear the click that time. It was actually because they did like a start from the second time they were recording it, and then she made them stop because she didn't hear the click of where the instructions would be for Prince and telling them what to do. And then Liv stepped out of the room for the second and third recordings because it was just Donna and Hannah doing their parts and doing stuff. But there was Hannah. I don't think she was trained on that, but just smiling away, playing the drums, having a good time. Donna going into her thing, and then you're bringing Liv back. And it just blew my mind. And it was just a cool experience. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to see the Sexy MF one or Son of Sexy MF, excuse me. So I have nothing to compare it to. I know some people that were able to go the NPG one, they were jealous of the Third Eye Girl one. So I don't know if anyone that went to Third Eye Girl was jealous of MPG. But of course we'd want to get both, right? With our VIP, have recording sessions for that, for people that are paying for it and having it and to cover it. It just was it. And then this is what I love about the Prince fans. This is what makes you guys so freaking amazing, is you guys, all of you that are there, whether it's 1982, a 2012 track, an 85 track, 2015 track. It has the same importance to you. So these people that were asking technical questions about things from the pedals to the guitar playing, and I know that they spent some time, Donna did with this gentleman that asked, and I've heard stories about him. He was nothing but nice to me, just amazing. He met his wife during Love Sexy. He's been having some hard times, but such an amazing individual. And I'm so glad that he was able to be there and all those people in the room, they were able to share that experience. And then another person that had a freaking octopus heart tattooed on his arm because of the unreleased Third Eye Girl tracks that made up Octopus Heart. They're originally put on for Menstrual Cycle and All These Things. And to be honest, when it came to Menstrual Cycle and All These Things, it's because I think at the time, that's when they're doing the instrumental for Even Flow by Pearl Jam. So it was a little bit of a play on a woman's thing. Menstrual Cycle, Even Flow, you guys get it. We didn't need to hear Heavy Flow, but an Even Flow is great. Bada bing, tip your waiters. I'll be here all night. So just with that, and then we had the break and we were just on a whole nother level, but it was another 3-hour break. And opinion here, as soon as I was able to step outside to get my phone, I kind of wanted to do some lives there, but was immediately asked for photos and other stuff. And, you know, I haven't seen these people in years or some of these people I never met. So of course I'm going to do that. So you have the 3-hour break. It went by a little bit quicker for me than the last one, maybe because we're more prepared for it, but it did seem to take out a lot of people. And what I mean by that is even on the panels before, some people were falling asleep next to me or falling asleep around the room. And it happened with Maite and it happened with Randy, and people didn't want to. They were upset at themselves for doing it. So here it is. We have the next panel. It's Maite again, who we had in 2017. But I only got like a brief one of that because something was mixed up with Alan Bellew. I know I'm mispronouncing that name and I apologize, but his dates were mixed up because things being moved around for the Prince on the big screen, having to move dates because the Minnesota Timberwolves in the playoffs that year. So Maite was able to share stories. She felt the love in the room, immediately started getting some tears in her eyes and just sharing stories. And the thing that was great about this time, you guys all have the book. So we don't really need to talk about the book as much because, again, as I was saying, all you guys there are Prince experts. You're knowing your stuff. You're researching it. You're absorbing information. So to have Maite's music be played, to show the original photo that made up Children of the Sun, to have her go, even though we have Latino Barbie doll, although I shouldn't have it, you shouldn't have it, we have it. For her to go in it and about the lyrics saying, you know, it was originally for Sheila E., which we knew at the time was recorded, but the whole thing of like, you know, about being married, you can be my boy, you can be my wife, and it affecting her and having to tell that story in a little bit more background, that was great. And of course, I don't know why Scorpio isn't circulating. But, you know, Maite not being able, not having heard it for the first time in about 20, 25 years to get her reaction from that was pretty amazing. Of course, you know, I do feel that the reason why some visuals weren't played, and we'll get into that, but like during her thing is kind of has to do with the Netflix documentary because there's so many unreleased videos that have Maite in it. As we saw a video still for Pope, so we know that is circulating and whatnot. But to hear the music and to have these stories and know that she was going to join Randy later to tell more stories was going to be mind-blowing. And what I like now, and sometimes I'm worried, just like the photos of Maite that I shared from the celebration, I only put on my Instagram, not on my Facebook, is because sometimes the stuff that Maite get and other people that were with him, the hatred that they get or the misunderstanding, let me say that, the misunderstanding they get for the time that they played in his life, it's just, it confuses me so much. Stop putting these people together as a competition. She played a huge, important role in his life for a long time, even before they were married. That's their story. Don't crap on it. Don't show jealousy. Don't do these other things, you know, and not trying to bring up the other person's name, but Manuel as well. They played a part. There doesn't have to be this freaking competition. Let Maite be Maite. Let her get the love that she deserves. And again, if you guys are upset about something, that's her story to tell. You guys have a problem with it, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it can hurt me a little bit you know, but if that's stuff that she wants to share, people got to let that go. So this is another reason why I love you guys. In that room, the love that she got, the appreciation that she gets, I want her to get that all the time from the community, that you understand stuff, that everyone played a part in it, whether it's Jill Jones, whether it's Paul Pearson. And this is why I try to have relationships with all these people, even Van Jones. I know how some people feel about him. It's important to have these people and to have relationships, have them and have them on my show, have them at certain things, because they all have different stories to tell. They all played a different part. The main thing is just not stepping on other people's stories. And Maite hasn't done that. And other people haven't done it. Everyone was being respectful. And I want her to know how loved she is, and whether she's bringing out a dog to feel a little bit more safe, or whether Dave's got her back or whatnot, it's all good. Now we get into Randy. And Randy shared stories that she has, you know, shared before about the abandoned building and how it came to be and the phone call and all these other things. The one story that I love the most was, like, you know, the videos that Maite would be sending Prince. And we got a little bit of a glimpse of that. If you guys stay around, I'm sure you guys do, from the Get Off video collection where he's watching her. And that was our first introduction to Maite. It's like setting us up for what the future is going to be. And there you go on these things. So he's having these videos. And this probably predates, I'd say probably it was 1990, early 91, to where he calls Randy over to his Hollywood Hills home. And just, you know, she mentions that she brought her dad, which is kind of funny, but no one got that at first. And then here it is, he's having her watch the videos of Maite dancing, and what do you think? And then, like, I think that's going to be your future wife. And Prince is like, wait, what? No, that's jail bait. And then Randy says, I appreciated him making that comment. So that was cool. And then, but you're asking me my opinion. That's what I'm doing. And he's wanting to know about the dancing and all this other stuff. And like, to the music that you've been doing lately? Okay, you can make it work. Like, is that all? Because my dad is downstairs. And it's the middle of the night. And Prince goes, your dad's downstairs? Yeah. This I got to see. I got to meet him. So goes downstairs, meets him, and he goes, it's nice to meet you. It's nice to meet you as well. And he's like, I've invited a lot of women over to my house in the middle of the night, but none of them have ever brought their dad. Bam. That makes a great story. You have all these things led up, whether it's from the jailbait line to all these things. So it was just hilarious. And Randy is a plethora of information. I know that she gets super shy at times. I sent her like a quick text afterwards, just going, you were great today. Great panel. And then just sharing her stories, and about one time of, you know, seeing this piano or seeing this club, and Randy wanted to shoot there. So she sets everything up, has a bunch of models, stuff that have worked on videos with Prince before. Then Prince sees the outside of the club and I've seen him do this. Like, he clowned something with Andy before. And to see him go, I'm sure hope the inside of the club looks a lot better than the outside. You know, I wish sometimes I could do the Prince impersonations that Scotty Baldwin can do, because it'd be like that I like to see. So then he walks in and he sees the models and the layout, and it's like, well, all right. Because it was better, obviously, than it was that. But that photo of just Prince at the piano and kind of like the three chains of gold outfit that you see, very interesting. And just these stories that she's able to get background on, and especially, it probably makes it easier for her because you have these pictures that trigger memories. And she was saying a lot that a lot of these photo sessions were filmed. When it talks about that one photo, Prince asleep on the train in Tokyo, like he really is asleep. And then they were supposed to do a whole photo shoot. And it reminds me of stuff I'd hear from Prince where he gives an order and then you're getting stuff ready. And then by the time he walks into the room, he's like, what are you doing? Like, no, you told me to do that. No, So here was going to do a photo shoot on the train. And then he's like, no, don't want to do it. But she still got the shot and has some of that stuff on film. And to have those stories is amazing. And then to bring in Maite and for them to say stuff. And just from what Randy could see, because remember, Randy wasn't exactly taking photos of the time period of someone else, that would be Afshin and others. From what she was able to see, you know, she said that this was his soulmate and all these other things. And then Maite, kind of like Prince Quick with a line about, no, that's jailbait. For Maite to go, Randy, you kind of romanticize things sometimes. It's you being a romantic. There's probably some truth to that for sure. But it made such a great story. And for Andrea to let it breathe. And again, they did go a little bit over. But when you allow the person, when you're not on, say, Fallon or whatever, you have 5 minutes to tell a story. You let the story breathe. Because there was some times to where there was a little bit of a delay where Randy said something to Maite, but she let it breathe. She wasn't like, okay, we got to wrap it up. We're only having this time. And then just the photos that were being shown, albeit one was off that they first did it, like when they first were showing Randy's photos, that's going to be for later. And they kind of messed up the order of that. They got it back on track. And the only delay there would be is when Andrea was signaling for the next photo, they weren't seeing it when she was signaling. So she had to say next photo. So about 15 to 20 seconds would be taken away from that. So those things playing into it and them being able to be such good storytellers again, because you have the photos to tell it. And then Maite, you know, telling photos of what of Prince, and we're combining this, but it's okay, where Prince basically said that she needed her bangs cut, like give her bangs, not cut, but to give her bangs, and then literally flew her out to LA for it. He didn't exactly like the finishing job, so he was doing it himself. And then he had, albeit not a person from LA, but a person the next day, like make it a little bit better. And then when she was having like that little S swirl that I got going on, like they had her like, because of the humidity sometimes, they had to like gel it down. So it was an interesting story about that as well. Those things were going on. And then what people had, they were on not a different track, but didn't get the shoe collection panel that we got on Friday. It was now their turn. So now we can go back and get ready for Prince on the big screen, the NPG, which was, we're going to get into that. So I changed clothes that day. I kind of wore like a hoodie originally. I wanted to wear a suit for every time. This suit right here was going to be the suit that I was going to wear to the Sunday brunch, and we'll get into that. So we get in. Everyone's looking great. We're arriving early on the media bus, and you guys are already lining up outside of Paisley. You guys were supposed to be on the shuttles, but some of you decided to take things into your own hand and park at Lake Ann and walk over. Come on now. I'm just going to leave a thing right here because the comments are lulling. And I can't see it, but hopefully it's not lulling for you guys who are able to talk. So here it is. We're all dressed in the nines, kind of like walking around, seeing people. And again, my opinion of stuff, I was feeling sometimes overwhelmed with the crowds and us being around. Because for Welcome to America, I was able to kind of like be in the back, dance around and do stuff. Since there was more people there this time, wasn't able to do it. So it was already getting worried about stuff. And that's where I kind of like ducked out before Friday took place. That goes into different things. So here it is. We're having a lot of James Brown music being played. We're seeing people, everyone's like there in their seats early. I'm outside. I'm going to VIP, talking with a Paul Pierson for a little bit, seeing Morris, talking with Damon for me as well, giving Tony a fist bump. So you guys are going to kill it tonight. And look, let's just get to the main act. All right. Here it is. You guys are waiting for it. You guys are getting the introduction. You had Sharon come out to kind of give a little bit of feedback on it. But it just, we were all waiting for the main event. we couldn't wait any further, could we? We're waiting for the intro to thunder. We're waiting for other things to take place and transpire and to make it happen. So here it is, finally getting on. We're seeing a show that is not circulating. We're watching the video version of it from Glam Slam 1992, early on in 1992, mind you. And apparently it's on film as well, but we got the video version. Sometimes you would have the screen freeze on Prince's face or whatnot. It wasn't exactly perfect. He had like the weird statue and the close-up of that. That would be the little breaks. Myself and others, we're like, we're going to be towards the back because we want to be able to see the screen and see the musicians. And with how Paisley is laid out, you have a really great view everywhere, unless you're behind me and the person that was next to me that's a tall person as well. Then you're probably like cursing us because literally before he even sang one verse, I was being asked to move over a little bit. So I had to be in my friend's space a little bit. But Thunder kicked it off. Prince and the facial expressions and the guitar. And there it was. Mai Tai dancing on stage with him for the first time. And then Mai Tai was super nervous backstage. She came out in the outfit when we were in VIP. And I'm like, you got this. You know, you look great. You know, and she did. She danced everything. And then everything being set up, you didn't have Rosie Gaines there. You had Liv Warfield in the mix and other stuff going on. But wow. Prince's facial expressions and guitar playing and all these other things. But it makes you just remember what a powerhouse Rosie Gaines is. What a bleeping powerhouse. Thunder, you know, we never really got to see it in the States. You did see it on some of the Diamonds and Pearls tour. But then it rolls into what we've kind of all seen on Arsenio before, is with Daddy Pop. And he was having some other songs that were being worked on at the time, being worked in it. And then between that, you know, he was already starting to have a little bit of a wardrobe change, but we'll get more into that later. So Daddy Pop, the dance moves and the stuff that they did in Arsenio was still transpiring over, and that would be kept for the Diamonds and Pearls tour. Then you had Willie and Abel live, which we really didn't get to see a lot of, you know, on that tour and other stuff. And it just kicked butt. And then Prince with the wardrobe change. I'm sure the girls are like, oh, man, look at that. That ain't old skin. And then him, because he would literally call these things dress rehearsals. And for real, homeboy was just letting loose of the pants, tucking in the shirt, putting on the tie and taking his time, tying it, asking Rosie if it's straight. I'm sure you're like, no, don't button up that shirt. Like, you know, take your time, buddy. It was just really cool to see. And that's what I'm saying. You would call these things dress rehearsals for a reason. And there you go. But that Willie and Abel version was hot. Yeah, a little bit of mixing in with, again, different songs. I don't know if I'm getting this mixed up too much, but let me just say that when Well Done was being done like that, the studio version that we've been hearing circulating that's unreleased, that kicks it. You know, that was given to the Steels and all these other things. And the Steels on stage were amazing. Chris Coleman on drums. Let me just say what a difficult job he had having to basically drum in for Michael Bland, one of the most respected drummers in the business and by Prince fans. Chris Coleman brought it. And yeah, the Game Boys, as they hate being called, Kirk, Damon, and Tony. Tony still had some of his guitar playing and other things going on. But it was just really great to see, and they are all having a good time. And of course, we're having a great time. And some of those Prince, you know, and I skipped it and I apologize. Diamonds and Pearls was before Willie and Abel. And the facial expressions, again, like when he's supposedly going to hit that verse where Rosie kicks in, so much playfulness. So great to see. And his antics and facial expressions, just so on point. And just wondering, like, where he decided to come up with that and why that wasn't used more in the tour, albeit Nothing Compares to You. Again, I'm getting mixed up with Diamonds and Pearls. Nothing Compares to You. I apologize. But yeah, the Nothing Compares to You of going into stuff was just amazing. But the Diamonds and Pearls version was on a different level than when he debuted it earlier in 91 at the Special Olympics in Minnesota. So here it was. You had this stuff, Diamonds and Pearls, bar none. And now you can see why he never did a full version without Rosie Gaines again. So that was amazing. And just to see those things on a different level. I've never really been a fan of Jughead. I'm sure a lot of people that way. It does work better live than it does on studio. And it gives the boys a lot of time to dance, get the rapping on, and Prince to do his little look at me here looking for Willie rap, you know. But just playfulness and to see these bands, albeit Peach and Black, if you're watching this, I know you guys were big fans of Jughead for a while. But, I mean, it's kind of hard to follow Diamonds and Pearls and Willie and Abel. So you put Jughead in there, and there you go. You know, you're not putting in, like, a super hit song, but you're doing something that's super playful. So then we hit Sacrifice of Victor. Daddy Pop, amazing. Seeing the first dancing that Mai Tai would do with Prince, amazing. Seeing Diamonds and Pearls live, a top three song, amazing. William Abel, great. Sacrifice of Victor, again, I cannot wait. And I know we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. But to hear the demos that we're going to hear of Rosie Gaines on that Symbol album material, that Sacrifice of Victor, again, on 11, just absolutely amazing. What she brings to that song, what she brought to the MPG, I wish Prince would have begged her to stay. I know that the story goes that she felt it was just too much of the boys in the club, the boys in the band, you know, she was the only female, albeit Mai Tai was coming in at that point, but wasn't playing an instrument, so made it tougher. But my God, Sacrifice of Victor with Rosie Gaines. Just an absolute highlight. And she's such a powerhouse. And Rosie, we want you to get better. We want you back at Paisley. We want you performing with that or just yourself. Just, you are so loved. You're so missed. Live in All Them did you well. And we cannot wait to hear that stuff. But Sacrifice of Victor, whole nother level. The version that we saw on that Act One TV special in 92, she just brings so much more to it. No disrespect to the band, no disrespect at all. But Rosie on Sacrifice of Victor is where it's at, for sure. And then that was the Nothing Compares to You, where Prince put on the set list because someone else using the song and then people thinking, oh, he's covering her, and that's not true. But again, the playfulness that Prince had with Rosie, that was it as well. She was such, I wouldn't say like, trying to think of the right word, and wouldn't be a crutch, but they played off of each other so well. And it actually, I'm like, damn, this really works as a duet. Because one of my favorite versions of Prince doing Nothing Compares to You is the new tour rehearsal called Nudity, where Prince is doing it on the piano by himself. Amazing. I never liked the hits version as much as that, but this version with Rosie and seeing his playfulness, his facial expressions, took it a whole different level. Hi, Shelby. Good to see you. Can't see your comments. No big screen, but love you, girl. Rosie, Nothing Compares to You and Him. You know, just made it work. And now it's like, now it brings back memories with Shelby being in the room of seeing them perform it together during the Welcome to a Forum run and then him with Mary J. Blige. But, and Shelby, my dear, you know, I love you. So it's no disrespect. Just that version with Rosie works on a different level on so many different things. And then you had Thieves in the Temple. Now we had that carry over to the Diamonds and Pearls tour. And he outfit change again, all these things. I'm wearing kind of like what would be kind of like a mixture of what he wore in the Seven video. And of course, earlier during Willie and Abel, you kind of had the outfit that he wore for the Willie and Abel video and Money Don't Matter Tonight. And there was times where he wasn't wearing the do-rag and you saw the freaking typhoon look going on, just crazy style. But with Thieves and the acoustic, took it to a whole another level. And then, you know, I'm like, oh man, I hope they have it in it the way that they did on the Diamonds and Pearls tour. And boy, did they, you know, just mixing those two songs together. It's kind of like what Prince would do with Forever My Life on the Sign of the Times tour and mixing it with it. Then the screams and all this other stuff. Thieves in the Temple on a whole different level, brought into a different place. Amazing. And throwing it in there made it even more powerful. And here it is. This is just dress rehearsal. And so many changes will be made. And then you had Sexy MF and giving you all of that. And again, that's early 92. That song is being debuted there for the first time and getting the entire crowd to sing it back to him. Like, who am I? What am I? Being a little bit of playful with the crowd before he goes into it. And then again, adding more unreleased songs to the verses that he was putting into it. And just his facial expression. He wasn't doing the whole gun mic between the legs thing that he ended up doing later on. But he controlled it. This ain't about the body, it's about the mind. And just that band, funky as can be. Funkier than a sack of granddaddies, right? So Sexy MF on a whole different level. And again, that song, just like others, being debuted for the first time. All right. Can we talk about Insatiable now, though? Can we talk about that? And how I wish that he kept the way that he performed it into the Diamonds and Pearls tour. Maybe it was just so close to what he did with the new tour and Do Me Baby, with him getting on the piano and writhing a little bit, albeit that outfit in the new tour was a little bit more provocative. But his delivery on Insatiable, perfection. When Robert Hilburn in 92 said that Insatiable was a throwaway, dead wrong. He should have been at this show. Insatiable, with this performance, and it already was, at least to us, on par with Scandalous, on par with Do Me Baby. These other things that just, I made a joke to Alana, just because, you know, Prince sometimes later on in his career, when we're doing these songs, we're talking about Ovulation Station. But earlier in his career, it'd be like, is everybody wet? And you just knew that Prince had this effect in this version of Insatiable. Because it was making me feel this way, that his delivery is on point. And I was hearing the girls scream. Insatiable. I wish he would have kept it like that for the tour. And then Cream. This version of Cream. Top notch. Better than what he did on Arsenio, which was our only time at that point of seeing it. Let It Breathe, Let It Play, being even more playful with stuff, giving Rosie that look like, filthy cute baby, you know it, right? Just these little things. And then kind of like looking over at Tommy, what's up, man? You know, I got it like that. Tommy's playing, looking amazing. Loved the flower in 92, loved the flower in 2022. All these attentions to detail, and just Prince, the consummate performer. And then being all over the stage, talked a little bit, little girl that was just staring at him, wasn't dancing, wasn't moving, was just looking at him, and him just going like, you okay? You need something? kind of try to get some reaction out of her to realize that, oh, I'm just staring at him. Him going over to the bar area to make sure those people that probably dropped $100 a ticket back then were getting their view, and the people that were behind the stage at the Glam Slam getting stuff as well. Cream on a whole nother level, but probably it brought on because of how amazing that insatiable performance was. And then you had it to where you had, we thought the show, you know, show's ending. You guys had the crowd, you guys were cheering for them to come back on stage. MPG, the lights were kind of doing it, but I don't even think you guys needed the lights. You guys know what's up. You weren't saying MPG in this funky house. Just saying MPG. You didn't need the lights to cue you. And then there it was. You got 1999. Oh, is that how it's going to end? All right. Because that's how it kind of like from the actual one tour was doing it. But then you had a longer version of Baby, I'm a Star mixing in with stuff. And it just was on another level. I'm like, oh, this is how it's going to end. Blah, blah, blah. You'll do a little bit of push. But again, he's doing some unreleased lyrics from other songs. They're getting in there. I'm like, oh, this guy. It's just like when he was showing Maite at the end of that Get Off video, like getting you guys ready for the other stuff that's going to come. I love that 1999 Baby, I'm a Star, and then push when you have Rosie getting another thing to show off her vocals and a little bit of a, you know, although this time they didn't do it, they didn't do the It Takes Two, but they were just being up beyond it, and it gave Tony as well a little bit more time for his rap, and then also it showed him on guitar as well for it. Push was cool. You know, I probably liked the Special Olympics version of that more so than this, but the 1999 Baby, I'm a Star, the instrumentation was a little bit different, and I liked it. Then you got Get Off. I'm like, oh, this is how it's going to end. And Get Off was on a whole another level, and just being playful, being dirty, and getting all of that. No Diamond and Pearl. You didn't need them, right? You just needed him and the looks he was serving all night long. And then over the years, we get like Get Off House Style that would kind of like be a minute or two after Prince played. And it was just like the dun-dun-dun-dun, the one that's in the video. So to get a full-on Get Off House Style where he just did Get Off, did everything, you know, maybe not the full extended, but to basically get a Get Off House Style where there was that full version as well. Like, man, we're getting it all tonight. That's how it felt. And Prince usually would say that at his shows. This time he didn't need to say it. But that performance was hot. It was nice to see him wear the same outfit, at least the top that he wore at the MTV Video Music Awards. And this time to see it not, the sleeve not get caught on the mic like it did the MTV Awards, but just hot, amazing. I'm forgetting right now who is the person that directed it. They weren't thanked in the credits, but if you guys remember, just put his name on there so I can make sure to get him his credit that he deserves, because it was so beautifully shot on multi-cameras. Yes, we're working with video, so there was limitations. But kudos to the Prince Estate. Kudos to Netflix for allowing that, for having approval that we can at least have that one concert to watch. But it just shows the vast stuff that's in the vault. You know as well as I do, as bad as that band was, as bad as Chris Coleman was, as bad as all they were, we would have been just as happy watching that on the screen at Paisley. But again, because you're watching it on video, you're probably going to be getting some of that hiss. You're not going to be able to get the levels of Michael B on the drums, then the levels that you're getting for the guitar. So them having it be done, like, why are they playing with the screen? This is why, is because some of those limitations. Hopefully in the future, you're going to have people like Chris James and others be able to work on it. And hopefully, if on film, hopefully Prince was able to do what he did with Syracuse and have it be where it's going to be different channels. Albeit a lot of work is going to be into it, but someone like Chris James, if there was only 24 hours in a day, he'd work 27 hours on it. So just amazing. And then here it is. Everyone brought on stage to give props to. They made sure that Mitch was on there for Mitch to get props for allowing stuff, and then Mitch to throw it back to Kirk. It sometimes felt there was some finality because there's some certain things going on right now that are uncertain. The thing that was certain to me, albeit what would be happening a few days later, was that this was one of the funnest celebrations, and it's because of you guys and the staff at Paisley. Thank you so much. Thank you to Mitch. But you guys, and again, it being in June, cannot say enough. Your energy levels, just your happiness. Because too many times when the celebration was in April, there was a lot of tears. And look, Prince originally had the celebrations in June for a reason. He may not have celebrated birthdays, but if you want to celebrate his birthday, I was like, good, you can age for the both of us. You'd be playful like that. It being in June is where it belongs, and that's where it's going to stay, plain and simple. Then here it is. They did a quick thing of getting the chairs up for people out of the dance floor. You have Rashida and Spinna in the mix again, and just people getting their 7-inch vinyl, albeit for Thursday night, you guys got a napkin, do-rag, or something like that. I think it was closer to a napkin, but some people are like, I'm going to wear as a do-rag. I don't care. That's why I'm saying that. But so amazing. Now, this is the things we're going to get into, and we're going to talk more about this on the after show. And I apologize for going over, but it's just my brain works differently in how I remember stuff. So it just goes in it, and I love being able that it's like that, where I used to take notes all the time, and now I don't have to, and I'm thankful for it. And just going on the memories alone and being with you guys, it brings it out. So the things that I'm going to go into, I talked about how great Paisley was as a staff to everyone and how everything was amazing. There was little bits of stuff I do, but it's how my brain works. So if I'm being told something is an outtake of a certain air and it's not, it kind of like, you know, the hair on my neck stands up. I want the pacing to be better, and I do believe it will. Again, this is put in last minute. They're trying to do stuff. They know that you guys want to spend as much time at Paisley as possible. This time you only got 2 days instead of four. And the prices did reflect that a little bit. I also feel it's kind of like because they knew that you guys wanted to spend so much time at Paisley, that's why things weren't timed right. And you guys being able to be outside, you wouldn't be able to do that in April. I do know that a lot of you guys are introverts. So that 3-hour thing of having to be around people was a little bit nerve-wracking. And then again, these people are wanting to hear Maite speak. They're wanting to hear Jill speak. They're wanting to hear Tom speak. And them falling asleep, they're getting upset at themselves. And it's just the pacing of stuff. That being said, I feel in the morning time, hopefully it's not going to be that early in the future. There's a way to do stuff maybe 10:30, 11, and have it be 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, especially if you have everything be at Paisley. You can have these events start a little bit later, how we have the kind of like the 9:30. You can have doors open at 8, fine, and have it go until 2. Hopefully we can get it to those 4 days that we can have the dance till dawn parties. We have it till be 4 o'clock in the morning, and then we'll see, because we're already talking about people being tired and stuff, right? But here's what I'm hoping for. Is in the morning time, whenever the show start, we get a concert of Prince to kind of like wake us up. Because sometimes that's better than that Caribou coffee, right? Get some of that Prince on the screen talking to us. And like I said, it's another one of the reasons why I want the Netflix documentary to come out, is because they have exclusive rights to stuff. So it makes it harder for them to go to them like, hey, we want this. Hey, we want that. That's why you don't have as much freedom. Although they were able to do stuff in 2018, we got a Time performance from 83 of First Avenue. We got a different Revolution show. Excuse me. Whenever I'm in Minnesota, I get this congestion, even if I'm there for 24 hours or been here over a week now. But I can't explain it. And then people like, you have LA smog, what? Why can you deal with that and you can't deal with this? I don't even want to get into it. But yes, I want the concerts to come back. 2 a day would be great. Maybe you have like of a 2-hour concert or 3-hour concert, we have the first 90 minutes shown, then we have the second half of it shown after the break, because it gets us all woken up. We need that. We love the unreleased music, don't get me wrong, but the visuals of Prince, of a performer that is so heavily underrated, and it's disgusting. I mean, and we all of us here, we want him to be known for more than Purple Rain. We love Syracuse. We love the sound check. We probably bought multiple copies of the box set. But we want the other stuff. And it's just important that it's done right. And that's what goes on to it. But you guys, you fans, amazing. I know that the lull was tough. Some of the panels were tough, but you guys are absolutely amazing. And again, the reason that this celebration is a success is because of Prince and because of you guys. So thank you guys so much. And I sometimes wish every celebration is done this way. The last things that you guys hear when they're closing shop or when you're leaving, thank you. But also the last thing I want to hear is just kind of like how I sign off on my shows is thank you, Prince. Because we want to keep Paisley Park alive. We want to keep stuff alive. And he's definitely there. You feel the energy. And you guys are just absolutely amazing. I love you guys to death. I love spending time talking with you. Albeit this time, I was already getting worried on Thursday when I was getting touched a lot that stuff was going to happen. And lo and behold, it happened. But, you know, I thank Prince for making me a part of your guys' life. And I thank Prince for you guys. And straight up, I'm nothing without you guys. That's why I like spending time with you guys and stuff. And I get hurt at different things, but it's all love. Wrapping this up now, I'm going to be more in your face talking about this stuff. And yes, more 90s stuff. So what we're going to do is, albeit I know that we got a lot of people in here and I appreciate that. I know we're going to lose some people. But I'm going to take a little bit of a break. We're going to have an after show and we can talk more about what you guys want to see and just other things. Albeit you didn't get an answer on new releases and the Chicago Immersive Experience. But let's come back. I'm going to drop in the things for donations or whatnot if you guys want. I always appreciate it, especially because I'm having to stay at a different place because of COVIDopolis right now. But it is what it is. And I just want to hear from you guys more. And this way, the after show can be more interactive. I want to hear what you guys thought of my thought of my thing. Or you can be like, yeah, Funkenberry doesn't know what he's talking about. And let me just say, and I said it before and people heard me say it, is J7 was such a cooler name than Dr. Funkenberry. I had to come up with that last minute. And Jeremiah is where it's at as well. Thanks to my mom for naming me that and me later in life embracing it. So, but I just appreciate everyone who had something to do with the celebration. So all the panelists, Chris James, Tom Gorno, Jill Jones, Joshua Welton, Maite Garcia, Randy St. Nicholas, the NPG, Third Eye Girl, Prince, and all of you. We're going to sign off for a few minutes. I'm going to be right back. Much love to you guys. Keep it funky. Thank you, Prince. Much love.